Hey, Ian.
Hey, Bobby.
You're wrong.
Whoa! Good morning. How you doing today,
good,
man?
Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. It is
or you know
10,
what? Good
10
evening.
a.m. and good night.
I'm not gonna. Yeah, I'm talking to our audience, our loyal audience. I'm not talking to you because yes, it is morning for us, but it's really unfair of us to assume that people are listening to this in the morning. They could be listening to this late at night, and that's cool. You know, good late night.
That's true. Good night, everybody. Is that
no.
Wanted
don't
from
go
me?
To sleep. Don't go to sleep. No. The fuck is wrong with you?
How you doing, man? It's early. I mean, it's not. It's like 10 a.m., but I'm not a weekend person who likes to get up early.
It's early yet.
I feel like I'm still waking up. How's your week been, man? What's
Do
going
you
on with
you? Want to take like a couple more minutes, man?
No.
You could just sit there and stretch and yawn into the microphone, and well, I'll wait for you.
I mean,
we want the best Ian possible.
I'm planning to do that. We're going to do it on recording is all.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we say it once in an episode, usually around at the minute mark, but
uh-huh.
This is just garbage. Like, we should
well,
throw
we
it
did
out
we did realize we did realize that today the topic we're going to be talking about is something that I did not even realize you were not entirely familiar with. So, it's going to be an interesting.
It's interesting because I'm not less familiar with it than I normally would be for anything you
That's
picked.
True. That's true. You're also a fan of this thing. Anyway, we'll tease that out later.
How presumptuous.
More, but
you don't know. I could have hate watched a season and a half of it.
I mean, this is going to be a very different episode if that's the case. how
what
you doing, man?
To, man? I'm good.
Yeah.
We've established that. Stop asking me how I am,
Hey,
Ian.
Bobby. Hey, Bobby. How are you?
I'm good. Ask me again, motherfucker.
I'm trying to ask you to start getting into what we have been up to lately, because I don't know what else to do to start us off. Do you want to start over?
Nope. Okay. So, we just need to take a breather. I'm going to adjust my chair.
Okay.
And I'm sorry if I sound very echoey. I am recording from the inside of a cathedral.
Yeah.
So.
Bobby's at church right now.
I am.
You're wrong with Ian and Bobby. You're wrong.
Okay. So I have three things that I want to talk about.
Okay.
But I'm going to run through one of them.
Okay.
And the one I'm going to run through is Crazy Ex-Girlfriend recently ended.
Yeah.
And it's a show I love a lot, and it's really good. And the thing I really love about it is like, it's really, I mean, yes, it's really funny, and it's got a lot of really good musical numbers,
uh-huh.
But it's, at its core, a show about really flawed people trying to become their best selves.
Yeah.
And where the finale leaves them is just perfect, and it's really great, and I highly recommend it to anyone who hasn't watched it.
Yeah, I really love Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I haven't watched it in a while. I've only really seen the first season, not for any quality reasons, just life stuff. I tried to get other people into it a couple of times, and it just didn't like really happen, and so I didn't keep watching on my own. It's a really good show, though. But I how many seasons are there? Four or five?
Four.
Four. Yeah, I need to catch up. It's from what I've seen, it's fantastic. Musical comedies are one of my favorite things. I think Rachel Bloom is like a really incredibly interesting person.
I can't wait to see what she does next.
I know. I, you know, the craziest thing to me about that show is that she filmed the entire first season for HBO, I think. And then
I think it was the first couple episodes.
Was it only the first couple episodes? Okay. Yeah. But it was a lot, and they had to re-shoot a bunch of it to get it onto CW, and because it was a lot less safe for work originally. I always think that's kind of an interesting little piece of trivia about it. But yeah, Rachel Bloom is an incredibly interesting person.
I didn't realize.
I have kind of a giant crush on her, too.
I mean,
yeah.
Justified.
Yeah.
In that very first episode, there is a she sings a song called the Sexy Getting Ready Song.
Yes.
And there's an amazing moment where there's a rap breakdown.
Yes.
And this rapper starts rapping and then is just really horrified by what he's saying and becomes a changed man and calls up all these bitches he needs to apologize
to. That episode ends with him, I was going to say, calling all of the women that he has dropped gold bars on in music videos and apologized to them.
And I didn't realize that rapper is Nipsey Hussle.
I didn't either.
Who just got killed last week. Yeah,
that's
a bummer.
I know. I don't know why I laughed when you said that. I guess I just didn't know that information. That's sad.
Yeah. Anyway. What I wanted to use that to talk about, though, was there's an episode in the fourth season that kind of parodies Cats with Ricky Lindholm and Megan Amram.
Oh, okay.
Todrick Hall.
Okay.
But we're getting a Cats movie soon.
And I feel like Twitter has kind of been losing its mind over this Cats movie for a few reasons.
I am so excited about Twitter losing its mind about a Cats movie because Cats is famous for like two things.
Have you actually seen Cats?
Mm-hmm.
You have. Okay.
It's famous for two things, which is being the longest running show in Broadway history.
Right.
And also being the show that nobody likes. And I actually like Cats.
That's
like,
do you, okay, because that's, I do feel like, I don't know, I'm not a theater buff the way you are. I mean, I'm not against, you know, I just don't know as much about theater as you, but all the people I follow online who are into theater, like, seem to just kind of think it's a really silly, ridiculous concept. Like,
Cats is absurd,
and they get, I mean, spoiler alert for Cats, but like, don't they
there's
get
no spoilers for
don't
Cats.
They get taken up into a spaceship at the end?
No, well, the bare bones plot of Cats,
or is, which, it God,
by the way,
or
stars
something? Yeah,
a bunch of people dressed in cat suits acting like cats.
Yes.
Is that once a year, old Deuteronomy, who's the leader of the cats, chooses one cat to ascend to the Heaviside Lair and reborn into a new cat life. And so, you know, they are kind of picking one cat to essentially die and be reborn. But I'm also saying none of this matters because Cats is literally just 2 hours of people dressed as cats singing
about
cats.
Well, and so I think what Twitter lost its mind about is that there was CinemaCon revealed that these are going to be miniaturized people in cat costumes or people looking like CGI cats with human faces. It was unclear which was happening or if both were happening. But it sounds like a very strange film adaptation of a very strange show in the first place.
What I cannot get over about Cats is that or Cats the movie as a concept, is that I see how on paper, like, a studio executive looks at this and says, why don't we take the longest running musical in Broadway history and get like a pedigreed director like Tom Hooper to direct it. I see where that makes sense, and it has this like bizarre kind of grab bag A-list cast that includes the likes of Dame Judi Dench and Sir Ian McKellen, but also Taylor Swift and Jason Derulo.
And Rebel Wilson and Idris Elba.
Idris Elba, I forgot, is playing McCavity the Mystery Cat,
yes.
Who's kind of the antagonist of the piece, but who's only really in it for a second. It's insane. And again, Cats is so... Again, people don't like Cats, but it's so specifically theater. It's one of those ones you shouldn't touch.
Why do you like Cats?
I am just entertained by it. I think it's...
Is it because everybody else doesn't like it and you're an ironic
No, no,
hipster?
No. Because I thought about that. Because for years I was like, I ironically like Cats. And I watched it maybe 2 years ago for the second time live. And I'm like, no, I really enjoy the weird, bizarre world that this musical builds. It's kind of fun to live in for me. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's going to make either the greatest movie of all time or the absolute worst movie of all time. There's no in between, and I'm so excited for it.
The only, the closest I've ever gotten to feeling like I understand what Cats is I listened to a podcast called Comedy Bang Bang, which listeners of our show have probably at least heard of. And there was, you know, they have people on, comedians on as characters. And somebody came on and did their entire character appearance as Rum Tum Tugger, and just did not break the vocal stylings of bizarre theatrical Cats performances the entire time, and it was one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life.
It was spot on too.
Yeah.
Rum Tum Tugger, by the way, is the sexy, like, Mick Jagger-esque
cat. Which is kind of what he played it as, and it's
and Jason Derulo is going to be playing that role in the upcoming, sure-to-be Academy Award-nominated Cats movie.
Is Jason, what is he? Is he a DJ?
He's a singer, right?
Is he a singer? Jason Derulo is one of those names I've heard for so long, but I don't think I've ever heard a single song of his. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's, like, been...
I'm so embarrassed to be sharing a podcast space with you.
Look, when it comes to music, I'm a pretty basic white boy. I don't know much of. I know a lot of classic rock, and that's kind of it. I'm pretty cliche that way.
I'll send you my Cats cassette tape.
Do you have a Cats cassette tape?
No, I have a CD. Just sounded funnier. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm an imposter. Fucking idiot, Bobby. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Can I share something that I did yesterday that I want to talk about? I saw Shazam yesterday, and I really, really, really liked it.
I'm excited.
I'm a big fan of him. I'm blanking on Chuck's name right now. Jesus, what's wrong with me?
Zachary Levi.
I love that show. I really, really like Captain Marvel. You and I have always you've liked to troll me for my love of Shazam / Captain Marvel. For those of you who don't know, Captain Marvel was his original name. And it was great, man. You know, in the 2000s, DC rebooted their comics line with what they call the New 52 reboot. And they tried to update a lot of characters for more modern audiences, and they did that with Shazam, and it was one of, in my opinion, the best adaptations for a modern audience I've ever seen. It did a lot of really smart, clever, interesting things, and then they kind of dropped it. I mean, they didn't get rid of it, they just stopped following that story along, and this movie is very heavily based on that story, and I'm so excited to see where it continues to go. It was really fun. It's, you know, a lot of the reviews said that it was kind of like a PG Deadpool, and it definitely is. It has that kind of slightly meta vibe because it's about a kid in a world where superheroes already exist who becomes a superhero, but it's also really sweet, and it's about chosen family, and it's you know, I went in rolling my eyes at a couple comments I saw online that said that Shazam is one of the most diverse movies I've ever seen. And I was like, yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, it's like a white guy on every cover, but it's kind of is. It's hard to explain. And I don't know. I don't want to say more until you see it, because I was very impressed in a few different ways. But
I
highly recommend
it. Since they announced it.
I was too, and then I kept getting like worried. And then, you know, every single time a bad DC movie comes out, my faith went away a little bit more, but this movie is great. And it uses the fact that it's in DC in the right way, which is they just acknowledge that, like, Batman is a thing that exists without getting into any kind of specifics about, you know, stupid Batman versus Superman lore and shit like that. So it feels like it doesn't have a whole lot of onus to the DC cinematic universe, which is, in my opinion, kind of a strength, because I don't think that's a crazy strong cinematic universe. But yeah,
DC movies are starting to do something pretty smart to distinguish itself.
They're trying
which is they have a cinematic universe in which other heroes exist, but they are not particularly concerned about continuity, and I think that's good. I think that's a strength that we're not, like, necessarily looking forward to another Justice League movie, but we're looking forward to, like, these new characters and these new movies that are rolling out.
Yeah.
So Zachary Levi, I was trying to think while you were talking, is he the first MCU, DCEU crossover actor?
Oh,
I know we're about to get a couple more, but
maybe. Who else is coming?
Idris is happening.
That's right.
And then, what's his name? I can't think. Dave Bautista is happening.
Is he? Who is he going to be?
He's going to be in Suicide Squad.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think you're right, actually.
Cool.
Do you want a cookie?
Good for him, man. Yeah, I would love a cookie, actually. Are you offering for real, or was that just
I can drive down. I'll be there in about 6 hours.
Okay. Should I hit pause? Or...
I mean, that's up to you, man. What else? What else you been doing?
Another thing I have been into that I've talked to you a little bit mm-hmm. about is I've been on a bit of an Etsy kick.
Yeah. Yes, you have. Bobby's been sending me. Because... Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, I don't want to spoil. You go ahead.
Well, it's okay. So it started because I was trying to find creative storage solutions for my Nintendo 64 and my other like retro consoles. And I found some game cases, which were pretty neat and okay. I'm very excited about. But that led me into this kind of black hole of, or rabbit hole and black hole of,
Why the hole gotta be black?
I'm just gonna walk away right now. No, but of like fan games or mm-hmm. fan ROM hacks, mostly of Pokemon. There's like a couple Mario ones.
Well, explain really briefly what you mean, because not everybody's aware these things exist.
So for Pokemon, I found a lot of you know, when I searched like Pokemon games in Etsy, there's a lot of Game Boy Advance cards for these Pokemon games that have never existed. And
yes.
They're just fan made hacks of the original
yes.
like Pokemon game.
With new cartridge art and box art and mm-hmm. yeah.
And so some of them like will just basically be the older games, but they'll bring the newer Pokemon in.
Oh, okay.
But some of them just go nuts. Like there's a zombie Pokemon game, there's a game that I played a little bit of that's based on Kill Bill, where your character is kidnapped into prostitution and you start by fighting your way out of a brothel, and your first Pokemon is a Ghastly, which is the ghost Pokemon that you don't receive. It just kind of attaches onto you.
Uh-huh.
And you use this Ghastly to fight your way out of this this mob compound. It's real silly. And then there's one called Pokemon My Ass Version.
Yeah, this is the one I was most interested in because it sounds like a really talented hacker, like sixth grader, decided to make their own Pokemon yeah. game and
yeah.
thinks that the word ass is really funny.
Yeah, and so it's just like a ruder version of Pokemon.
Yeah, yeah.
I ended up not buying any of the carts off of Etsy because while I have no problem with someone hacking into the Pokemon game
uh-huh.
and like uploading it onto a Game Boy Advance cartridge and like selling that on Etsy, like I think that's kind of cool, and I don't, yeah. I'm not sad about any
I agree.
Money that Nintendo might think they lose.
Yeah.
It started to become obvious that the Etsy carts were people taking other people's ROMs and loading them onto your carts and okay. selling them. And I'm like, okay. I don't like that.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
kind of lame.
But, yeah, that totally makes sense. I agree with you on that. That makes a lot of sense, and that bumps me out too. So maybe there's different people making the box art and stuff than there is who actually originally hacked the
game. It seemed
that
way.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm just so happy that I found this like corner of the internet where people are making Pokemon fan games.
You know, we've talked before about how Pokemon specifically is a fandom that produces so much content. Like they make stuff. It's interesting. You know, I still think about like the kind of explosion around that Pokemon Twitch phenomenon a few years ago with
the crowdsourced
Pokemon game. And then there was what was that thing on Twitter a few months back that we both really liked? It was people were drawing their gym
leader gym
personas. Yeah, which is really like there's cool stuff in the fandom. It's interesting. I think it's because it's such a basic and such a easy to understand concept at its core, Pokemon is, that it just lends itself to that, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, that's awesome.
Have you been into anything else?
What else have I been doing? I've been rewatching The Wire, which is the best show ever made in the history of television. I love that show so much.
Now, you always talk about that show. What is The Wire?
Oh, my God. I hate you. The Wire... why are you really doing this to me? Okay. The Wire is fantastic. I mean, anybody who's listened to this before, we've talked about The Wire in detail already, so I don't need to do that again. I just, you know what? You made a joke the other day, because I've had some stresses in my life, and it's, you know, I jump back to favorites when I am feeling stressed out, and you were like, you made a joke, and you're right. You're like, why is this the show that you relax to? Like, it's such a depressing show. But it also is a really human show. It empathizes with everybody, like everybody for, like there's villains in the show, but there's no type of person that doesn't have anybody who's a hero in this show. Like there's people that you're rooting for who are drug addicts, and there's people who you're rooting for who are prostitutes, and there's people who are rooting for that are like killers who are murderers, you know? And I don't know. It's
a show that doesn't really have a good guy or a bad guy.
Yeah, and that there's something kind of peaceful about that, weirdly. Reminder peaceful. That we're all...
I just call soul-crushing.
No, but yeah. You're right. But I mean, like, it's a reminder to me that we should all just treat everybody, like, nicely. That's, like, everybody... I don't know. It feels kind of zen for me, because I think it's a really, really, really accurate and interesting look at people in the worst conditions, you know, in the world. And not in the world, but especially some of the worst conditions in America. I don't know. I can't say enough about that show. And it's crafted so, so, so well. That show reaches literary heights, like, all the time. And some of the best character actors I've ever seen. So that's kind of it. I've just been rewatching a bunch of stuff. I also have been following... Well, you have one more thing you probably want to talk about, right? You said you had three?
No, I already talked about all three.
What was the third? You said Pokemon and you said cats?
My crazy
ex-girlfriend. Oh, and okay.
Can I go back to my stupid joke I made like 2 minutes ago?
Sure.
About What's the Wire?
Yeah.
With Breaking Bad. I used to work for a company that manufactured manufactures security products. And in the final season of Breaking Bad, there's a moment where a vault is getting raided. And there's a close up of a keypad, and it was our keypad, and I screamed. I was so excited because we're this tiny little company.
Right.
And then I took a screen cap and then emailed it to my bosses and went, hey, we were on Breaking Bad last night.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of my bosses, he's a good guy but out of touch with popular culture, sent me an email in response that said, what's Breaking Bad? Never heard of it. Maybe you should try emailing the show. They might like the – so we could put it on our publicity. They might like the free press attention. And I'm like, yeah.
You know, I'm a teacher, and I sometimes use pop culture references in the classroom, and every once in a while it will really, really shake me to my core how much older I am than I realize. And recently I said something about Breaking Bad, and like 3/4 of the students just looked at me completely blankly. They had no idea what I was talking about.
Oh, that's on them.
No,
fuck that.
No, I'm saying
that's
like...
That's not that old. That's like... Wait, that show ended maybe 8 years ago?
That's what I'm saying. Like, to them, it's like, that's an adult show. They're still, like, 18. They still are,
like,
yeah.
That's like if someone made, like, a Twin Peaks reference to us when we were in college, if we had never heard of fucking Twin Peaks.
I don't think it is like that, though, because Twin Peaks is, like, a niche, weird thing.
So, yeah, Breaking Bad was more commercial. They should, that's like someone making a fucking, what's another show that...
You're
it's hard to think of it.
Bobby just got so mad at this. This is, you're like, you want to like get on a soapbox and rant now. This is hilarious.
When a family friend of mine who I do trivia with every once in a while,
mm-hmm.
Who is 20, she's in her mid early 20s. We were doing like the musical round, and one of the musical cues was Sexy Back by Justin Timberlake.
Sure.
And then she got it, and we're like, oh, great. And then she said something like, yeah, I remember this song because they used to play it all the time in sixth grade. And I'm like, fuck you. Fuck you. It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah, we're
NSYNC
old, man.
Wasn't even a thing when we were in sixth grade.
NSYNC wasn't a thing when we were in sixth grade? That can't be right.
I think they came out, when we were in, like, junior high, right?
Did they really? Oh, man. It
had to have
you
been, right?
You are making me feel so old right now. I realize I'm turning 34 this year, and for some reason that's, like, way more upsetting to me than 30 was. I don't know why 34 specifically. I think it's just because it's close to 35, but... Anyway. Yeah, so that's kind of what I've been up to. There was something else I wanted to talk about, and I'm blanking on what it was.
It's okay. We'll wait, man.
Yeah. Just give me a moment of silence.
I didn't mean to catch you off guard with this podcast.
I know. For a week. I know. I'm sorry. I don't know why I feel so out of sorts this morning. Normally, I'm way more organized than this. I apologize. Yeah, man. Actually, returning to The Wire for a second, it's kind of a similarity there with an emotion I'm having about this new thing, which is The Wire is one of my favorite shows ever, and I constantly forget that you haven't seen two seasons of it, which is crazy to me. Why have you not finished it? I mean, not to put you on blast or anything, but like,
honest, yeah. I don't really care for the show.
Yeah, is that right?
No. I have watched the first two seasons, I think, twice.
Yeah.
Just because I've been like, I'm going to watch the whole thing.
Sure.
And then, there's five seasons of The Wire?
There's five seasons, yes.
But, I don't know, life happened and I stopped, like, at the beginning of the fourth season. I've watched a couple of episodes of the fourth season,
okay.
But I haven't.
I highly recommend finishing it. I think you can just jump to season four. Keep going. I mean, it's pretty...
Yeah, I'm not going to rewatch.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably will at some point, but
right,
I'm not going to worry about that, because what ends up happening is I get burnt out after watching three seasons of The
Wire,
and I just stop at four.
Totally. On that note, you know, we're talking about something today that's one of my favorite shows ever, maybe my favorite animated show of all time. I'd have to think about that a little bit more, but it's definitely up there. And I did not realize before we started, until about 10 minutes before we started, that you've only seen the first season of it. We're going to talk about The Last Airbender.
Yeah. Oh, no, man. See, there was a moment where we could have done it organically, and I was panicked about, like...
Done what organically?
Showing that... I was very excited because we haven't played either of our stings for a couple of weeks, and I'm like, Ian, you're gonna pass up a moment to play your sting.
Well, but are
anyway,
we doing
whatever,
our stings anymore? Because that's what that's the thing is, I feel like we've been picking. You know, we did Doctor Who, we did Kingdom Hearts, and those are things we're both really familiar with. And so I picked this one because I thought it was something we were both really familiar with. So it wasn't my pick; it was just kind of like another thing for us to talk about. And then I find out, oh no, I got to lead the conversation here. I'm teacher for the day. I gotta school you.
You gotta school me?
Yeah.
Isn't that how you go into every conversation, though?
That I gotta school somebody? It's a bad... Yeah. You know, it is hard to turn off teacher mode sometimes. You forget. You go into that autopilot teacher thing, and all of a sudden I'll be talking to my friend and realize I'm, like, kind of lecturing at them. I don't mean to do it, but it happens.
I was not taking it that literally.
Yeah.
Because I thought, I'm gonna school you was a funny thing to say, and so... I thought, like, don't you go into every conversation very combative? Like, you're gonna.
Oh, that's me. Yeah, I love to argue and fight and just be mean to people. Bobby, what are your thoughts on Avatar: The Last Airbender? Let's talk about this show. This is a Nickelodeon television show that went for three seasons. It was originally on a while ago.
You know what I found out
yesterday? Let me look this up really quick. Yeah.
It was going to go for four seasons. Had you heard about this?
No, I don't know this at all.
The fourth season was going to focus on the redemption arc of Azula, who is Prince Zuko's sister.
She does not deserve a redemption arc. She's the only true villain in that story, and I want her to be that. She's great at it, but continue.
One of the writers recently talked about this.
Okay.
About how he had this grand, like... very emotional kind of like a redemption arc for her, and that got sidelined. Do you know why that got sidelined?
No, why?
Because the producers of the show wanted to focus their effort on releasing the live action Last Airbender.
Oh, sad. Yeah, so there is definitely a heavy cloud over this franchise, which we need to acknowledge, which is one of the worst.
I don't think it's a heavy cloud.
Well, here's the thing. I think it is, and I think here's the reason why. This is a cartoon on Nickelodeon. For you and me, that's not a bad thing. But for a lot of people in the world, that is all they need to know they're never going to watch this show. And my goal with this episode is to try to convince people who have hang-ups about anime or hang-ups about animation or hang-ups about what they consider to be quote-unquote kids' shows to try this show out, because it's really, really perfect. And the thing that most people know about it, I would say, is that there's a laughably horrible M. Night Shyamalan adaptation that they tried to franchise that was, like, one of the biggest flops ever. I mean, and there's insane decisions that were made around that movie. I mean, very famously, M. Night Shyamalan cast his lead actor because the kid sent in a tape of himself doing kung fu.
I had never watched that movie before, and I watched the first 15 minutes.
Shocking.
It's first off, it's hilarious how inert that movie is.
Those characters are so awkward. They all sound like they're dead inside. Like they all sound. It sounds like it's a post-apocalypse movie. There's no joy to it all, especially given how joyful and fun the original is.
It all looks really cheap, too.
Yes.
But I'm going to disagree and say that no one gives a shit about that. I think we've all forgotten about that movie. And I don't think that Avatar: The Last Airbender has disappeared
in my experience, when I bring up the show, everybody first thing makes a joke about the movie. So maybe that's just me.
It's fun to make a joke
about
the
movie. I guess you're right.
Because Korra came after the movie, right?
Yeah, that's true. You're right. This show came out in 2003, which is interesting because it was very possible that I was going to miss this. If it hadn't gotten as good of word of mouth as it did, I probably wouldn't have checked it out. I got into this in college, so a couple of years after it originally aired. My brother was really into it and talked about it very highly, but it took me a while to realize that it wasn't just, you know, Dragon Ball Z he was talking about, but this was kind of like actually good storytelling. And,
When do you set up the series?
Yeah, why don't you set up the series? Because you know the basic setup, and I'm going to be talking a lot about later stuff, so.
Okay, so the setup where we find the first episode is that there are four types of airbenders, right? They're four nations,
There's
right?
One type of airbender.
There's four types of benders, elemental benders. Yeah. And there's four nations to represent each of them, right?
Yes.
Water, air, fire, and earth. And I said those out of order, and the order is actually important. And there's an avatar who masters all of these elements. And every time the avatar dies, they're reborn in a new bender.
And that bender cycles through each of the different nations.
Right. So it goes air, earth, water, fire. Is that correct?
I think that's right. Yeah, I think that's right.
Because there was a fire bender before Aang.
Yeah.
And then Korra is an earth bender who comes after.
No, Korra is a water bender.
Korra is a water bender?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. No. Have you never watched Korra?
We'll get to Korra.
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Okay.
But, so Aang is an airbender and is a young boy, mm-hmm. who's the new avatar, and he gets frozen in ice for what, like a hundred years.
He's running away from his responsibilities as an airbender. As a 10-year-old, he freaks out and runs away from home and ends up getting kind of frozen in ice.
And then 100 years later, two of our other heroes, Katara, who's kind of I'd say she's the POV character of the first season.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And her brother...
Sokka.
Sokka. I forgot his name for a second. They find Aang frozen in ice. And in that time, the airbenders have been wiped out. The Fire Nation has grown to power. And
Aang
is the last airbender.
Yeah.
And he's kind of stepping into his role as Avatar and trying to master the elements.
Yeah, so the first season is about Aang being woken back up from this ice. The world that has kind of come to exist while he has been frozen is heavily based on the World War II Imperial Japan that and how it affected the other Pan-Asian nations around it during the 30s and 40s and 50s. And it's a really good show. So let's start with what I think is most interesting. The world building on the show is strong as hell. Each of these nations represents or reflects different aspects of kind of Asiatic cultures. I mean, I don't want to like put too much specific on that because I think it's just kind of a fun little thing. But the Earth Nation is definitely supposed to represent China. There's some references to the Great Wall and to some imperialistic tendencies even in China. But the, you know, one of the things that I think the show does really incredibly well for a kid's show is that over the course of these three seasons, the show humanizes the villains as well, including the nation of the Fire Nation itself. We learn the show takes great pains to show humanity in all spaces. There is not just easy villains in this show. Our villain in the first season, and we're going to get into some spoilers for the show. I'm going to stay away from huge ones, but I think broad strokes are going to be okay. So, if you're interested, watch the show. But Prince Zuko, who is the villain of the first season, he is the disgraced son of the Fire Nation's emperor, is hunting down the Avatar, and we learn it's because he wants to return home, that he has a dad who's definitely an abusive, hard man who, banished him for very little reason at all after scarring his face and told him that he can only come back if he finds the Avatar. And we, our villain in the first season is a confused and scared teenager who wants to go back home. And that's, oh man, Bobby.
See, the thing is, we could have gotten away with this if you had kept talking, because we could have just edited my track out. But now that you brought
you're
this to a
totally
halt,
right.
In the middle
that's, oh,
of a
that's,
fucking sentence,
that's all on
that
me.
Means we're going to have to address this. Bobby. There's no way to edit it out unless you start your whole entire thing again. You fucking asshole. You amateur. It's like we haven't done 26 of these fucking episodes.
That's 100% on me. Bobby's... Never mind. I'm so sorry.
Well, they're all going to hear it. They're all going to hear the fucking clock because now we can't edit it out. You dumbass. Anyway, I agree. I think it's really smart to immediately introduce Prince Zuko the way they do.
Yes.
Because we see the Fire Nation. We see the aftermath of the Fire Nation's destruction. We see Prince Zuko as kind of as a representative of the Fire Nation.
Totally.
Do bad things.
Yeah. And when he first shows up, I mean, they it's a bait and switch. He shows up and he's the villain. He is surrounded by people who are wearing masks so you can't see their faces. He has shock troopers. He, immediately starts like throwing around old people and the pilot and yelling and threatening. And he's the villain.
But by the third episode, you get his motivation
very
clearly. And
he's still the villain, but you fully understand why he is doing what he's doing. And I will say that Zuko has a crazy interesting arc over the course of the series. This show does something similar to... So, full disclosure, because some of this stuff I'm going to kind of unconsciously steal... the reason I had this idea is a critic that we both really, really enjoy named Film Crit Hulk. We've talked about him on here before. About a week and a half ago, started watching The Last Airbender, the show. And, he basically talked at the beginning of it about how much he has been hearing about the show, but how the kind of American anime style was just a little bit hard for him to get into. And I had that same experience. I did not have a whole lot of experience with anime when I was younger, other than maybe something like Dragon Ball Z, like one of the big ones, And by the end of it, he's talking about how this show has some of the best human characters ever. And it really struck me how... I don't know what I'm trying to say. I guess I love this show. I think it's really, really something special. you know, Aang is one of the kind of most morally interesting characters I think I've ever seen on television. This show has a 10-year-old being told that he has to stop the leader of a country that is eating up other countries. I mean, this guy is essentially the Hitler of this world. And the question over the course of the show becomes, well, how do you do that without killing him? Because this is a monk. Aang is a person who Aang is a vegetarian. He doesn't like to hurt other people. He's an airbender, which means that his primary form of combat is really evasive and speed rather than hurting other people. He likes to kind of, I don't know. There's just something really special. I'm really happy this show exists for children, because it hits the right messages like every step of the way, and manages to be about kind of like the epic world building fantasy tradition still. Like it's, I think this show is as tightly built of a world as something like Lord of the Rings or something like Game of Thrones. Or
I was just going to say, watching it, because I've only watched the first season and a half. I was trying to rewatch a chunk of the first season in preparation for this. And I was kind of wondering what the appeal of this show was for me.
Yeah.
And its world building does actually remind me of something like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was thinking a lot about Game of Thrones watching this yesterday, which is kind of interesting because Avatar, The Last Airbender, is not very much. I mean, it is, but it's also the furthest possible thing from Game of Thrones.
No, totally. I know exactly what you mean. It's what I mean is it's, you get a super clear sense of the world. The way the world has been built up and the reason it exists this way makes sense. And it's housed in character development. Every change to the world and the world building is built into characters. I think so the reason I brought up the film Hulk thread is he made a connection that I've been thinking about a lot. He said that, you know, at the end of his thread, he said that three of the best shows, in his opinion, in the history of television are The Wire, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and shit, what was the third? Oh, and The Sopranos. And I think, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask a question.
Sure.
We can ask off mic if there's sensitive information.
Sure.
But my question is, how did you hack into Film Crit Hulk's account?
Right? I freaked out of that, because those are three of my favorite shows ever. I mean, these are also three shows that I have been trying to bully Bobby about for our entire friendship. But I think the Buffy one specifically stuck out at me with Zuko, because something that Buffy did that no other show I'd ever seen did was the line between villains and heroes in that show is very, very gray. People show up as pure villains. You see them murder people, and three seasons later, they're helping the good guys, and you want them to be doing better. That show is about redemption in a lot of ways. And I mean, I would argue that Zuko is as much the main character of Avatar: The Last Airbender as Aang is, and his story is beautiful. Like, he's a person who has grown up in an abusive home, who was deeply, deeply ingrained in belief in kind of fascist tendencies and stuff that his father believed in and that his country acted on. He's part of a massively competitive military society, and he's just trying to find his way, and he does by the end of it. I don't know. It's really beautiful. I also think that Sokka is one of the best characters in television, because he is a comic relief character who he still has, like, there's nobody here who's just a joke. Everybody in this show matters to the story, and everybody is loved by the people who made the show. Like, you can tell that they like these characters and feel for them and understand why they function the way they do and everything. It's superb storytelling for a children's show. I don't understand how they did it that well. And then I will also say, you know, before we get into any more specifics, there's a bunch of comic books that came after that bridged the gap between this and Korra, which takes place about 60 years later with the next Avatar. And those are fantastic as well. Korra is fantastic as well. This is like one of the best kind of worlds I've ever seen, and it hits on all cylinders. These showrunners are really, really, I don't know. I just can't, I feel like I'm just gushing about the show, so I'm going to let you talk for a minute, but.
So you went on at length about how Aang is a really interesting character, which I absolutely agree with,
yeah.
And how Zuko is a really interesting character, and how Sokka is a really interesting character. And my question to you is, why do you hate Katara?
No, I mean, Katara's obviously... So here's the thing, like, Katara... Shut up. I think what I'm trying to say is, like, I expect Katara and Aang to be interesting. I don't expect all of the... Like, the reason I brought up Sokka is the person who shows usually don't know what to do with, because he's the comic relief, and they give him heart, and they give him soul, mm-hmm. and he matters, and you feel for him, and he has love interests, and he's the comic relief, but he's not, the show doesn't throw anybody away.
No.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know you're kidding, but also, and also, Katara is amazing, and I hate you. Let's talk about that. This show has some of the best female characters in television. Katara is... A badass. By the end of the third season, she is one of the best fighters in the world. The show also has done some really interesting things with disability. There's a couple of characters. There's a character in the first season who is an inventor who is in a wheelchair, and this is in, you know, a world where technology does not really exist in the way that we understand it, and so that matters. And then we have Toph, who is our new character introduced in season two. One of the reasons why it drives me crazy you haven't watched as much of season two and three, because Toph really starts to shine in season two, who is a blind little girl who is one of the... Because she's blind, she has like a daredevil-esque ability to earthbend really, really well, because she can feel the vibrations of the rock and stuff around her. And she's this like... just badass little tomboy who is kind of an ass. Like, she's this rough and tumble grumpy kid who's playing the archetype you would expect to see from like the grizzled war veteran in a western, who just doesn't believe that helping people matters and things like that. And she goes through this arc as well, and these characters all inform each other. And I don't know, man, is this interesting? I hope I'm not just being boring and saying the show is good, but
I find it very interesting. I'm not being condescending.
Okay.
I like listening to you talk about it, because you're a good.
Well, thank. I mean, I wasn't searching for, but I want to make sure I'm not being boring here.
No, not at all.
Also, I want to talk about a character who I'm gonna compare this to Buffy. You have to have a matriarch or a patriarch in a show like this. Somebody who represents like parenthood, because usually these characters don't have parents, or their parents are not super well involved, and having somebody like an older person they can look to for guidance and clarity is really powerful in shows like that, where that's kind of the chemical makeup of the show. And Uncle Iroh on that show, who is Zuko's, Zuko's uncle, who is introduced a similar kind of bait and switch to Zuko, as this fat old jolly goof who is the emperor's brother, and apparently was, you know, dishonored in battle at some point in his past, ends up being one of the most kind of beautiful characters in the show. And his love for Zuko and his help in saving Zuko from himself is really, really fascinating. The voice actor who played that role is a man named Mako, who died during the course of making the show, and he is missed.
Really?
In season three, he's not voicing Iroh anymore, and they try to work around it, but that was the acting role of a lifetime for a voice actor, and he killed it. There's an episode called Tales from Ba Sing Se that I encourage everybody to watch, which is just three short stories that exist in the world, one of which is his, and it's really, really beautiful. The show has beauty to it. It has everything that I want. It has amazing characters. It has really optimistic moral values. It has a belief in humanity, and an acknowledgement of humanity's ugliness and the pain that humanity can cause. but it's just so real. It feels so real. And the world building, there's secret societies and evil warlords and magic powers, and all of it feels so grounded. And all
I was
the
thinking about.
Yeah.
Oh, no, go for
no,
it.
No, 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 go. Well, the last thing I was going to say, and this is something anybody who's heard people talking about Airbender probably has heard before, because it's a favorite amongst the fan base to talk about, but one of my favorite little, like, just kind of details of the show is that they based the bending styles of the four different elements off of actual martial arts that were meant to represent those different elements. So the waterbenders are supposed to look very fluid and flowing in their mm-hmm. motions. The earthbenders are supposed to be, you know, like very solid stances and quick, hard movements. And the airbenders are almost, I think one of my favorite things about Aang is because this is a cartoon and because of his powers, he gets to be kind of Bugs Bunny a little bit because he gets to be so fast and weird and evasive that he comes off as cartoony, but it doesn't feel fake. It feels like he has powers, like this is an ability of his, rather than the show just, you know, playing into cartooniness' sake, you know, like, so it's not like he's getting hit in the head with a hammer and, you know, his eyes are seeing Tweety birds, but he is like, I don't really know how to explain it. The other thing I will say is I love all three seasons. I will say season one is the weakest, only because there are a few single episodes, individual episodes, that I don't think are especially strong. Overall, I think the arc of the first season is great, but I think there's five or six skippable episodes. Season two and three, I don't think there's a weak bone in the body of that show. I encourage everybody to watch the whole thing. Yeah.
I was thinking about yesterday, because I, you know, I've talked about, you know, my favorite kind of narratives and my favorite kind of protagonists. And I was thinking about Aang, kind of through the lens of like Steven Universe and other kind of, you know, good-hearted protagonists. And Aang feels apart from them, I think, because he feels so emotionally complex, if
yes.
that makes sense.
Yeah, I think what makes Steven Universe adorable is that he is simple. And he understands complex emotions, but he's like, I don't know, there's something about Aang that's...
The strength of Steven Universe, I think, is contrasting the world against Steven and Steven change the world.
Yeah.
And The Last Airbender has Aang trying to exist within a world, kind of trying to find his place within a world. Yeah.
I mean, the show started with, I mean, the inciting incident, the backstory is that he ran away from this crushing responsibility
right.
because he wanted to be a child, you know?
Right.
Which is like, that's really, and then he wakes up to the world and sees what it is and blames himself for it. You know,
and all of his emotions feel very authentically like that of a 10-year-old.
Yes.
He's not.
Yeah. He's not even perfect. He gets emotional, or he makes bad decisions, or he loses his way, you know?
I will say, separate from that, there is something aesthetically that was hard for me to get into about the show that wasn't visual. Because I think the show's visual style is very appealing, and I was into it at first. It's like, it's a combination, I think, of music and style of voice acting that feels very Saturday morning cartoon to me. That is present in things like Justice League.
You
just have to get over it. And
well,
if you react to it negatively, like
that's,
I do, it's
that's
just
kind of what
you,
I mean. I think that is
over.
Most present in the first season, because I know what you're talking about. Maybe I just got used to it as later seasons go on, but I feel like we have, so, you know, we talked about impressive women in the show. By season two, the villains kind of move, that role moves away from Zuko, and it becomes his sister, Azula, who is one of the most terrifying characters I've ever seen in children's television. She is an actual sociopath who basically just tormented him his entire life. You know, she has two...
Oh, it's...
What's that?
Oh, no, no, go for it. Sorry.
And she has two best friends, one of whom is May, who is a goth girl who throws knives, and one of which is Ty Lee, who is an ex-circus performer who knows how to block chi so she can stop people from using their bending powers. And the three of them just are a force of nature that, you know, so like this show about these worlds and nations and superpowers, the villains of the second season are three teenage girls, which is amazing. Like there's, I don't know. I don't even get what the point I was trying to make was there, but I think that,
the complaint I had though, yeah. And it's not really a complaint because it's just a stylistic thing, has nothing, like literally nothing to do with the narrative substance of the show.
Sure.
It is just like the quality of the scoring in the first season. Mm-hmm. It's not even the quality of the scoring, it's the quality of like the instrumentation and kind of like
cartoons are beneath you. I get it.
No. But and it's the broad acting of like the bit players.
Yes. Yeah.
But I don't want to say it's the voice acting because there are some. There's some really good voice acting in the series.
There's some really good voice acting. I will say that Mae Whitman is Katara, and she's incredible.
She's so good.
Sokka is this guy named Jack DeSena, who came out of All That. That was his first big thing.
Zuko's Rufio.
Yes, Zuko is Rufio.
He's great.
I think Zuko and Mako have the best vocal performances in the show. I think Azula does as well, but I always like my villains, so...
There was like a I don't know if I'm projecting a thing that isn't there. George Takei had like a
he was in the show,
right? But he had like a like sort of a resurgence, like circa 2000, like the mid 2000s, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He wasn't as omnipresent.
No, he started to get that Will Shatner thing going in the two. I agree. I think you're right. Like all of a sudden he was joke pull that you got when you wanted nerd shit in your show.
And so he gives a very George Takei performance. Yes. That's really fun, but I think it was before that performance became like an omnipresent thing.
Sure.
In recent memory.
Sure.
And so it's kind of fun listening to a George Takei performance, you know, like much after Sulu, but before George Takei is like the...
I totally know what you mean.
The cultural icon he is now.
Right, right.
If that makes sense.
Yes.
Before like the whole "oh my" thing happened, you know?
Oh my! Yes, I totally agree. Yeah, I don't
good,
really
man.
Know what else to say. It's really funny too. The show is actually funny. Like it's a kid's show, so it's goofy.
It's
but it's,
yeah, I was gonna
but
say
it's not,
a show for kids.
Yeah, but it's not goofy in a dumb way. Like it is a funny show.
Well, I hesitated for a second to compare it to Game of Thrones because I mean. Both shows open on a map of
both have a lot of sexual assault.
Both so much sexual assault. And gratuitous nudity.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
much.
Just
no,
way
but,
too much gratuitous nudity in Last Airbender.
But it's at the same time, it's like the show can get dark, but it's not cynical.
No, it's never cynical. Yeah.
Right. It's not, you know, so like I would feel very comfortable showing the show to kids.
I
like,
would
it feels
too.
Very aimed at them.
I want to, you know, if I have kids one day, I'm going to try to watch the show with them. I think it has valuable messages about people and helping mm-hmm. people and why that matters and all that. It's so good. Also, the show doesn't drop anything. One of the things that I really like about it as it goes on is all these little friends that we meet in season one start coming back. Everything feels permanent. There's object permanence to this world, which isn't usually isn't always the case in kids shows. You know, I think like Steven Universe does that well sometimes, you know, but, for the most part, like it feels it feels more episodic.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah, and this feels like a consistent world that exists to the point where there those couple episodes that feel weak because like you recognize, oh, this isn't the world. This is like a slightly they got the tone wrong here.
Avatar: The Last Airbender does a thing that most premium, you know, like prestige dramas don't do well.
Sorry, did you just call it creamy? What did you say?
Premium prestige.
Okay, go ahead.
These creamy ass dramas.
I was like, wow, that is language I've never heard from you.
No, it does a thing that a lot of shows struggle with, which is that it tells an overarching plot, but each episode is a self-contained plot. It is not just a chunk of things happening. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end to every episode, and if there isn't, it will go part one, part two,
and we'll arc it over two episodes. And everything that happens adds to Aang's journey. That's something else that Buffy did really well that I want to connect this to a lot, is that Buffy kind of mastered, in my opinion, mythology and Monster of the Week, switching back and forth between those two. And how, if you're going to do a Monster of the Week episode, your character, your hero, needs to end up closer to something emotionally than they were when the episode started. They need to have an arc that adds to the overall arc of the show. And Avatar absolutely does that. Nothing feels wasted, I guess is what I mean. It doesn't feel like you're watching something that is disposable. You're watching something that's building towards a thing. And then it builds to it perfectly. I think the finale of that show is amazing. It essentially ends with a 2-hour movie, and it's a showdown between the Emperor and Aang, and it's not what you expect in a bunch of different ways. It's really, really cool.
I have not watched it.
I know. So anyway, I guess the point I'm trying to make, Bobby, is this is an intervention. You now are required to watch the rest of The Last Airbender by next week. Have you watched any of Korra?
I will tell you what I've watched of Korra.
Okay, sure.
It's going to sound insane and stupid.
Okay.
But I knew about not the overarching ending of Korra, but there's a thing that happens at the very end of Korra
that you told me about. Yeah, so Korra is, what's the tagline of that show? What's it actually called?
The Legend of
Korra. The Legend of Korra is the second show in the series, and Korra is Aang's next iteration.
Aang's successor.
So Aang has died. And this is a 16-year-old... Well, I mean, it's like supposed to be 60 or 70 years later, and Aang has passed... Well, I mean, if there's a new Avatar, the old one is dead. She is a waterbender who is 16 and it lives in a more industrial modern world. And the show made some splashes because it ends with an acknowledgement that Korra is either gay or bisexual and is... one of, I believe, actually the first portrayal of a queer character, female character in animation, in children's animation, at least in America. So.
And I had heard that from you, and then they actually did The Legend of Korra on Song Exploder, which is a podcast I've talked about. They talked about the scoring at the very end of Korra. And so I kind of looked up the last, 2 minutes of Korra just to see what happened. And then I fell down the rabbit hole of reaction videos to the last 2 minutes of Korra. And there's something really moving about watching a lot of like LGBTQ teens react to the final moments of Korra. And I just watched a ton of reaction videos. Is wonderful.
The funniest thing about that to me is that it ends, the show is some people actually argued that they were trying to like cover their ass with this. I don't think that's true. I think they just understand nuance and subtlety on this show. But the show ends with Korra, looking at this girl who she has become very, very close with over the course of the series, taking her hand in her own and like asking her to start a new adventure with them together, and then walking off into the sunset essentially. And of course a bunch of the fandom immediately exploded with an argument about whether that was indicative of her being in a romantic relationship with that person or not. And the showrunners came out and just were like, yeah, of course that's what it is. Like, what are you talking about? Which I thought was very funny.
I made a comment on this podcast before that got cut out because of reasons that will become obvious in a second.
Sure.
But in the trailer for The Last of Us 2,
yes,
there's a moment where there's a kiss in the trailer. I remember I read a comment online from someone that said something to the effect of, like, you know, I'm not really, I guess I'm not, like, super familiar with how, like, women interact with each other. But I took that to be more of, like, a friendship kiss than anything.
This is a scene in which two girls are, like, dancing together at a party and start, like, kissing each other. Like, it's absurd.
It's unambiguous.
Yeah. That reminds me of, I went to go see the second reboot Star Trek movie. I think that's Star Trek Into Darkness in the theaters. And
it's the third one, right?
Is that the third one?
No, Into Darkness is the second one, but...
is it the third one?
The moment you're talking about is From Beyond.
Okay, then it's From Beyond. I apologize. But the scene where Sulu is walking with his husband, they decided to, you know, they decided that Sulu is gay in this new movie. And he's walking with his husband and his son, and he hugs them and kisses his husband on the cheek, I think, and then they walk away, like, holding hands together. And I heard a dude in the row in front of me very loudly lean to his the person he was there with and whisper, "That must be his brother or something," I guess, which kind of blew my mind as well.
There's a thing that's interesting with a Crazy Ex-Girlfriend,
uh-huh,
where there's a lot of like pansexuality and bisexuality,
yes,
representation in that show.
Yes.
I had a moment, because I mean I guess we all have room to grow, but one of the characters was, you know, like, one of the female characters played, uh-huh, by Esther Pavitsky,
uh-huh,
was kind of like lusting after a female character on the show,
uh-huh,
and my thought was like, oh, her too, huh? Just because there's like so much of it,
sure,
on the show,
sure.
But I'm like, that's really cool that the show just does it and doesn't make a big deal out of
right.
it, you know?
Right.
To where like half that cast is kind of
one of my favorite songs on that show from the first season is the what?
Oh, that Daryl song about being bisexual?
No. That song is great, too. But I was thinking, this is not actually about sexuality, but it was kind of like, it's like the third or fourth episode, she becomes obsessed with Josh's girlfriend.
Yes.
And she sings this song about how she wants to be her and be inside of her,
yes,
and all that. And it's,
yes,
incredibly sexual and incredibly creepy and incredibly everything. And it's a joke about triangulation. But it, at its core, is really like a funny comment on like human sexuality and how complex it is. And I like, that's even before she's getting into like queer issues of any kind in the show. But I think it's like, that show is an acknowledgement of human emotion and how fucking insane human emotion is. And, like
that character, too.
Romantic inclinations come with that, right? Like
the minor spoilers for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, yeah, that character, Valencia.
Yes.
You know, when she, her kind of like practical purpose of on that show sort of ends after season one.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
And so that character comes back in season two, kind of, she undergoes some emotional change and becomes one of like one of Rebecca's best friends.
Okay.
In a way that's really interesting.
Right.
But, by the end of that show, there's a time jump, and we see her kind of like meet a girl in a bar, and then there's a time jump, and then they're like, together,
uh-huh,
and so her, ooh, yeah, her big romantic pairing in the show ends up being like another girl after not like necessarily.
Man, we're so woke, Bobby.
But I'm not. It's just interesting that
no, I totally agree,
because it caught me off guard. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
Valencia, and then what? I'm gonna tie back to Korra,
because
I remember reading a lot of shitty like fan comments in Korra, like, well, but did they set up her her like sexual identity enough to like earn this moment?
Right.
And I'm like, does anyone set their own sexual identity up to, you know, like, see, at the beginning of like any other movie, does like a heterosexual character have to announce their heterosexuality,
right,
at the beginning,
right,
of,
well,
anything,
and a,
know,
lot of the pushback to that was the fact that early on in the earlier seasons, Korra had expressed interest in men, and people just like were like, well, if that's the case, then they're just changing the character. That was what a lot of the language was, is you're rewriting the character, you're rebooting the character as gay, which is inherently like a misunderstanding of how human sexuality even right. is allowed to function, right? So it's, yeah, it was interesting. Definitely interesting. I highly recommend all three of these. Three meaning The Last Airbender, The Last Airbender comics, which are all fantastic and do some fun stuff by completing or button ending, or I don't know what you would call it, like book ending the series. And then Korra, Legend of Korra, is also fantastic.
And like Ian was saying, the first season is a little bit rough. So if you want to just jump into the second season, just watch the M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah. And then I hate just jump you so much. That season. Is definitely not what you should do. No, I would say there's 5 or 6 episodes that are not great in the first season. Let me actually, I'll list what a couple of them are if anybody's wanting to watch the show and skip some of the chaff.
I've watched the first season, and I don't remember there being a particularly weak link.
A few, and I can tell you exactly what they are. The Great Divide, I think, sucks. That episode is bad. It's boring, and it feels little kiddy.
What number episode is that?
That is 11. Okay. It's the episode where they are trying to cross the Grand Canyon, and they have to basically make Palestine and Israel best friends again. And it's just very like basic and silly and kind of dumb. What else? I think other than that, I think that most of them are pretty good. They're figuring out their way a little bit. There's a few that feel kind of one-off, but overall, I mean, yeah, the show is good, man. Also, each season is only about, I guess if the first season is only 13 episodes. No, 19, I'm sorry. The second and third are 20 each, but there's a lot to the show. It's definitely worth watching. Is it on Netflix or anything? Do you know?
Okay, so this is how you have to watch it. Nickelodeon.
Oh, no. Is this like really it?
Yeah, Nickelodeon. Well, you can buy them.
Yeah, it's not on Amazon Prime or anything.
There's a complete Blu-ray set, and then Nickelodeon has a subscription add-on to Prime, which you can subscribe to. I think there's like a free month or something.
Well, that's minorly frustrating. It used to be on Netflix, but it's a good show. I highly recommend it.
Can I will never ever mention the M. Night Shyamalan movie again.
Yeah, sure.
Can I say a thing I didn't realize that the movie did?
Yes.
That's amazing. Is every episode of the TV show starts with Katara doing kind of a voiceover.
Yes.
Describing the world. And it starts with her naming off the elements, and then you getting kind of like a silhouette of a bender doing like that element,
yes,
showing
yes.
off that element. And it looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then I forgot that the M. Night Shyamalan movie, just without any context or voiceover, starts with four benders doing those moves. But it's just really awkward. It just looks really bad, and it looks really awkward.
The weird thing that the movies do, too, is they change it. So in the show, like, when you move your hand, the air moves with it. Like, it happens simultaneously. The movie does this weird thing where all these characters are doing like really crazy, like weird hand flips and stuff for like 10 seconds, and then they kind of push out a Hadouken of air. Like, it takes a minute to call the element, because I imagine it was just cheaper to do it that way. And so it's really just, it looks like kids playing on a playground and pretending to have superpowers, and then just bad CGI like put on top of that. Because they're not actually doing a thing. It's like they're calling up a spell with complicated hand motions. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I know exactly what you're
saying. Yeah, it's really, really hard to explain. Also, for kind of no reason other than the fact that I think they wanted to cast the kid from... what's his name? The kid from Slumdog Millionaire. They made the Fire Nation all Indian people, which is like completely undercuts the colonization metaphor of everything involved, because I mean, arguably India is one of the most like victimized countries by colonization in human history. I don't know, it's every step of that movie made really bizarre choices.
A jarring thing, I remember there was a discussion about it when the movie came out, but a jarring thing is having that movie open and I was like, oh, Katara and Sokka are white. Like, that was really kind of weird.
Also, not good actors.
Katara went on to star in a Transformers movie, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Did she really? I should look into who else.
Oh, my gosh. And Sokka was in the Twilight movies.
Oh, there you go. All I remember is that Asif, all I remember is that Asif Manvi is in those movies, which is just really weird.
Is he really?
Oh, Jesus. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm not wrong. Let me look this up. I'm looking it up right now.
If you're gonna make Katara white, like, Mae Whitman's right there.
Okay, now I want to look this up because...
Asif Manvi is Commander
Shepard. Yes, okay. So, yeah, he plays the bad guy from the first season in it, which is just truly bizarre. All right. Well, I think that's all I wanted to say about Aang and his crew. Anything else you want to add?
No, but let's do the movie next episode.
Yeah, definitely. No, next episode, are we going to do Undertale for real this time?
I mean, let's say maybe, and if not, we'll change it.
All right.
If anyone actually like waits, who listens to this podcast, waits for the end and waits to hear what we're going to talk about next week, yeah, so they can catch up. Email us at yourwrongpod@gmail.com.
Have we ever gotten an email there?
I don't know.
I don't either.
But, you know, I'll check it this time if someone... Definitely. Or just the chances that you actually know Ian personally are pretty good. So just let him know, like, hey...
That's what I feel like if anybody was mad about anything on the show, I would just get a text about it. Because we only have, like, 9 listeners, and they're mostly my friends.
But, you know, like and subscribe.
Yeah, please do.
And, you know, until then...
You're wrong. Oh, no, go ahead.
No, it's.
I stepped on it. No, I didn't mean to step on it. Bobby! No, Bobby!
Good. We're good.
Bobby!
Listen, actions must have consequences. You're